Oh, didn't we just win something? Didn't we just win another prize?
We did. Tell us more about this, and why did no one go up and collect it?
Manchester. Who goes to Manchester? Come on.
Tell us about it, please. Yes.
It's our second award of the year.
Ooh.
Yeah. This is from the Christian Broadcasting Council, which is very prestigious. One way of looking at it is fourth prize. Because it wasn't quite gold, silver, or bronze, but it's highly commended, which is nice. But we're up against BBC and all these sort of people.
Yeah,
it's platinum.
Copper.
Pewter. Solder.
Anyway. Did we win?
I think we've won a certificate. Not an actual
frame.
We won.
I think it's framed, and we've got someone to pick it up for us, supposedly. it's not bad. It's not bad. You know, we shouldn't complain.
Not to be sneezed at.
No, certainly not. So
anyway, won it because of what?
The category was website of the year.
Oh, it's the website.
Audio website.
Oh, right.
Audio website. Right. Good word.
Did they mention the best website?
Well, I don't know, I wasn't there.
There must be a list of names, eh?
They've actually got comments about us, but as we weren't there, we don't know what the comments are.
They commented about
us. See, we don't go for anything other than...
we will get an email about it, so we'll find out.
Again.
Yeah, we'll get an email.
Saffron. Welcome to the Saffron Planet Show. Only two topics this week, but big topics. First topic is barriers to faith, and the second topic will be Christian celebrity. In his first one, barriers to faith, we get a situation with my son and my father who have joined together with their objections and difficulties with the Christian faith. This is a very open and honest discussion, and I'm sure there's plenty that you can listen to and enjoy and actually learn from. So off we go.
There's one thing. Funnily enough, Richard Dawkins actually does admit that there had to be some
2% possibility.
Describes it as a God particle, and that there must have been something to start off everything. But his main gripe is that to admit a belief in that first spark is to assume that he should then believe in Jesus and the consequences and faith and forgiveness and all that. And I think so many people are like that. They accept that there has to have been a start of everything.
They don't like the consequences.
But they don't like believe in.
That informs their belief.
But
rather than scientific inquiries, it's fear, not science.
Informs their behaviour.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And shines a light on them. And they don't, that...
Yeah, that's perfectly all right, I think. I mean, that sort of... I don't know. People just don't like to be judged.
But I don't think people...
No, they don't.
At the same time, I wouldn't say that people that are Christians only...
The ones that don't... Are the ones that are going to be judged.
I don't think...
It's not down to your life.
At the same time, I don't think people that believe in God, though, or are Christians, believe it only because of the logic of there having to be something that... Do you know what I mean? That might be the starting point, but I don't think there are many people that... In fact, I don't think there are any genuine heart-believing... spirit-saved Christians that only believe in it purely because of the fact that there must have been that God particle, as you call it. I think that might be the very, very beginning of a journey, but I think to assume that that is the depth to which a believer's faith is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that might be a start, but I don't think to think that Christians have seen that and then chuck loads of stuff on top of it. I don't think that's
but
the situation.
I think that would help me personally if I knew that there, if I had evidence that there was something that happened at the beginning, that would be a good foundation to then strengthen a belief in what happened after that and and just the journey through the Bible. But I'd need to believe it from the start. As a starting point, I would not choose forgiveness and personal redemption. I'd have to actually.
Would you say that you need to see it? What you're basically saying is you need to have the reality of God before how He works.
Yeah, I'd have
which
to.
Which in many ways makes sense. If God isn't real, then all the points that we're making about the whole story isn't important. What you're saying is unless God is real, then why even go into the whole big story?
Yeah,
is what
definitely.
You're saying.
Yeah.
And I agree with you on that. Mm. And the reason why I believe what I believe is because of the first belief that God is real. But but and I know what you mean by when you're saying that, and I think a lot of Christians have reached out as well. They haven't started with anything else. They've started with an overwhelming, whether it was from the Holy Spirit or whatever, an experience, whether it was, you know, people do it in different ways, but an understanding that God is real, and then from that, that what he says in his word is real as well.
That's why it's so annoying when you have a conversation with a Christian and they think that the only way that they're going to convince you is to start to talk about forgiveness, when really all I want to hear is what they really think about whether it's true or not and whether there's real evidence. I don't care about
what the proof, isn't it, from you?
Yeah, and you need, I'm not going to find any
at the same time. At the same time, Thomas, you know, for all we know, and this isn't necessarily anything theological, Thomas put his hands in the wounds of Christ. Now, for all we know, if Thomas hadn't been born and lived at that exact moment and been in that exact country, he may never have found true faith. For all we know, it may be that there are some people that need something that deep and tangible. And, you know, Jesus said, blessed are those that believe without sort of, you know, well, experiencing. Exactly. Yeah. But there are those, even one of, you know, Jesus' closest friends had to physically see and touch. And I think that God will, in a sense, honour that. It's not necessarily that you have to. I do think faith is important.
I think it's really simple. And all I would say to people who are questioning these things is to ask God. Just to say, God, if you are there, you could be touched, and make it known to me.
In a way that I can understand.
Yeah, and I share that with lots of people.
You're only going to feel something if you really want it to happen.
Don't go by feelings. What will happen if you mean that sincerely and you ask God to make himself somehow known to you, he will make himself known to you according to your personality. And, I mean, I've said that to lots of people, and they've come back to me and said, you're right. Yeah. I never knew that. So you don't have to be intelligent with the Bible, and you don't have to believe the creation story, any of that. But just ask. He says, ask and you will receive. Yeah. And going back to the Obama, whatever his name is, all we need to do, will he be good? If we pray for him, if the American people pray for him, that God grants him wisdom, he will be a fine statesman.
I'll get rid of his second name for saying that.
Who's saying that? That's what it matters to you.
Talking about listening and finding out about God. Yeah. Just over four years ago, I had a quadruple bypass.
Yes.
Came out of the hospital and I was still in pain. I was lying in bed and I thought to myself, I don't know, Phyllis keeps saying, pray to him. Find out exactly what's happening. Yeah. I did.
Yes.
I did pray. Phyllis don't know. I never told her that. Yeah. It's a secret.
It's not now.
But I prayed, and the next morning I still had the pain.
Yeah, but you're alive.
You're still alive.
Beautiful, wonderful. Yeah. Without your prayer, you might not be here.
That's possible, yeah.
I think that's an interesting one.
What about the surgeon that done the operation?
Yeah, well, God works from... Jaime, can I ask you one little thing? What evidence, or what would you want to know that God's real? What is it?
I don't know. Like a lot of people me, I'm a disbelieving Jew, and so I see fact.
Right.
And the fact is, who knows? I can't. Where am I going to get the facts from?
From him.
How do you define facts, then?
I don't really know. It's got to be something.
What's the basis of fact?
Well,
I mean,
something
you believe,
material thing.
You believe in the fact of electricity.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can see it working.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I can see the working of God in the universe. Mm. So is that evidence?
Well, you've got some sort of spirituality.
No. I'm talking about facts now, evidence for things. There's that light up there. That's evidence of electricity. There's that wonderful creation out there. Isn't that evidence of an organized mind? Now, people who say no, I think they've got more faith than I have. To believe that, for me, is ridiculous.
The difference between electricity and nature is that someone's switched on the power and you can go to that person and get a quote or, you know, find out how they did it, but you can't do that with nature.
What they did was to apply.
But you can't get a reply the same day.
What they did.
come
on a minute. You're using an argument in the wrong way. What a person does who switches on the electricity is he simply keys into what exists, and that is the power of electricity, which is there. You can't have someone switch the light on if there's no power coming through.
That was an invention. That was something that they...
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you have the evidence of a power. You can see the evidence which shows you that there's a power there. Now, for me, and I can only speak personally, if I was to go out in that garden, not tonight, because I couldn't see anything, but I could look up at the sky and I could see the wonder of the stars. For me, that is evidence of an intelligent designer. Now, some people who don't want to believe will say, oh, rubbish, stuff and nonsense. Fine. But that's because they don't want to believe. What they choose to believe is that there is no God. It's as much a faith as those of us who believe there is. It's just that they believe there is no God. And for me, it takes a lot more faith to believe that than to believe that there is, because I see the evidence all around me. And for me, that's very encouraging. It's not primary, but it is encouraging as backup.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the way that you say that you look up at the stars and you can see the wonder, but just because something's wonderful doesn't mean that it's of God. And because there are some things that aren't...
No, it's the way the whole thing... It's
Why
the way
you?
The whole
Don't.
Thing...
I need you. I need you.
it's the way the
I
whole thing hangs together.
I went for a walk last week.
I'm so confused.
And there was nobody about, just a few ducks on the water. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking around and I could see all the colour, different colour. It was a horrible day. The black clouds, and then they cleared. And once they cleared, the ducks... came out and all flew, there were 100 of them, all flew away. I don't know where, but they flew somewhere. And I thought, you know,
do,
it's lovely here.
Do you do that often?
No, only when I have a rabbit.
I'm just wondering. What, I mean, what would happen if one of these ducks suddenly spoke to you?
Yeah. What would you? I'd be amazed.
You'd be amazed, would you? Well, I mean, there's the account of the donkey speaking.
Was
a donkey, even a snake speaking.
Not in the Old Testament.
In your Tanakh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, spoke.
Get the ducks.
Yeah, I don't really read the Bible. Yeah, I've never heard all the stories. I haven't heard that one. Yeah.
So, if a duck spoke to you, would that be enough evidence?
If his name was Donald, I wouldn't. I don't know. I don't really know. Possibly, if a duck was to speak to me, I can believe in anything, even Monica.
I really think God speaks to each and every one of us in such a different way. And I know how he spoke to me. I was just going to this tiny little church in Florida. Didn't realise I was coming before Jesus every time I went to that little church. And I was a person that had a lot of pain and hurts and sorrow. And after 3 months of going to that little church, I was a total different person. I didn't feel hurt anymore. Haunting and memories in my mind were gone. And I thought, how has this happened? You know, I just knew that I was a different person. And my minister, she explained to me, she said, well, you've been coming before the Lord. She said, every time you've come, she said, you have put yourself before Jesus and God. And I thought, well, no surgeon could have healed my heart or changed my mind, changed my way of thinking. No surgeon could have healed my memories or anything. But I realised that God can touch you as no man can and where no man can. And that's how I just knew he was so real. That's how I just knew. And I've had people say to me, Maria, I wish I had your faith. And I say, yes. But you can, because you just ask God, you make yourself real to me, because he does to every one of us as individuals. But we've got to want it. I wasn't even looking for it at the time, honestly, Jaime. I didn't even know how to. I was totally ignorant, and I didn't even know how to. But if you've been told or advised or make, you know, it's made it clear, just ask God, you make yourself real to me. He knows how we tick. He knows how we think. He knows what our past life's been. And he knows our beginning to our end. And all I do know is that he wants every one of us to come to know him. In a way that we just know he's real and he's for you. I know the Lord loves me to bits. He loves every bit of me. I've not been good all my life, far from, but I know that he loves you as much as he loves me. He's no respecter of persons, but I know he loves you as much as he does me. And that is wonderful.
In your opinion, how many times do you have to ask God to reveal himself to you before it's too many times?
It's never too many times.
What do you think? Once is enough, though?
Once is enough.
If you do it genuinely, from the heart.
Do it genuinely.
Yeah. Okay, but sometimes it could be hard. I don't mean like that.
You know? I mean like well, a some genuine, people do. Sincere
but if it's honestly,
request.
Simon, I think if it's a genuine thing, right from your core of your being, he's going to let you know.
I think you've got to even be willing to go completely against everything else you think in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, so look, because if you're really there, even if it completely turns my lot of my thoughts upside down, please reveal yourself. Even if I'm resisting you, you know, even if I'm resisting you, please make yourself.
It doesn't have to come the next day, does it?
No.
It could be a few
3 years.
3 months,
like myself. It was 3 months before I recognised and realised things were totally different. Yeah. Some people can be overnight. They can wake up one day and sort of think, oh, my gosh, something's different in my life. Yeah. I know my mother, she'd resisted many years, and I got her to go to this church. It was when Billy Graham Crusade was on, and she went. And when I saw her, she said, Maria, I feel different. And I said, wonderful, Mum. And we're hugging in the street. The next morning, she said, I don't want to get out of bed. I feel so peaceful. Yeah. She'd never, ever had that in her life. Mm. She'd never had that.
I mean, I was involved in a kind of a coffee bar. We had a young lady, she was about 15 or 16, name was Sarah. She couldn't form relationships. She wasn't very female. Although she was a female, she wasn't very female-like, you know. And she used to label us the God Squad as such. And the only reason why she came to our kind of coffee bar was to make fun of us as such. But, you know, we accepted her for who she was. And, you know, we didn't Bible bash her at all. But we spoke about God and God loving her. A little bit about her history is quite interesting. She was kind of thrown out of school. They basically said she would never get a job. As such, she attacked a teacher with a glass bottle. She attacked her mother with a knife. When she found out that, in fact, that her father wasn't a real father. It's a long, long story. But basically, she would never get a job. Then she falls in with the God Squad. And something that made her believe was the fact that this second father of hers, not a real father, but a stepfather, was a Freemason. Okay, now Christians have different views on this, but a lot of Christians say that Freemasonry isn't of God, you know. And a Christian brother and I, we were driving along to the coffee bar one Friday evening, and we passed by a Masonic lodge and something was going on, and we just prayed a prayer, and we prayed that God would actually bring confusion upon that meeting that evening, right?
Nice one.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, my friends are Masons.
Right, so, fine. Yeah, so we arrived at the coffee bar. We arrived at the coffee bar, and Sarah said, Where have you been? You're late tonight, you know. And we said, we were driving along, and there was a Masonic lodge out there, and we prayed that there would be confusion and all the rest of it. I said, you wouldn't understand that, but that's what we've done. Now, her father was going to be inaugurated that particular evening. He got his speech ready. It all went wrong. So she came the next Friday, the following Friday, and she said, what did you do? When? Last Friday. Well, remind me, you know, you sang about them as, we prayed it would be disorder. She said there was. And that was the beginning of a friendship. But then what started to happen was that we would go to church on a Sunday, and she would come after the service. She didn't sit in the service, but come after service and desired just to be among us. Why would she do that? A few weeks later, she said, I want to become a Christian. Wow. So we would talk to her, but there was nothing there. She wanted to be like us. She wanted to wear the Christian badge. And basically we said, you don't understand these things. But if your heart's in the right place, God will make it known. And then one Sunday morning, she decided to come to the service. It was a horrible service. I would not even want to go through such a service again.
One of those you cringe
at. It did. Mm. And she said, I can't deal with this. She came out with some other words and just walked off. And I was really concerned. And I just threw up a prayer and said, Father, keep your hand upon her and just bring her back to the God Squad next Friday, you know. And then about 10 or 15 minutes later, she came in and she was crying. She was crying. I've got to become a Christian. Got to become a Christian. Oh,
And then as I spoke to her, she understood. It was all there in place. Nothing needed to be filled. And we just prayed with her. And I don't normally dance. You won't normally see me dancing. But we all danced that morning. But the great thing was that later she got a job. She got a job over at Gatwick Airport. And the manager called her in. And he complimented her. He says, I've never met anybody like you. There's something different about you. Now, what I haven't told you, she was an alcoholic. There's a whole number of things. Mm. But she became a female. She could touch. She could allow herself to be touched. Surgery, internal surgery, was done to her. But not by us, by God, yeah. In his timing. And when people ask me for evidence, I say, look at that. There's evidence. She called out and something happened. But I think it goes back to the facts of her father. That whole business with Masonic Lodge. You know, there was something there she wanted. And another young lady said to me, when my aunt is reconciled to her children, I'll believe. That's what she said to me. This is another person. When my aunt is reconciled to her children, I will believe. That evening, I prayed a prayer with other people, though they didn't really support me in this prayer, that God would bring reconciliation between the aunt and the children. When we talk about children, we're not talking about children necessarily Simon's age, in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And within 3-4 weeks, there was reconciliation. The aunt had actually opened up. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, of course. But she still didn't believe. Still didn't believe.
But with Simon, I mean, would that mean something to you if you actually prayed something and something amazing happened? Or do you see that as evidence? Something that you couldn't put down to coincidence? Would that be in evidence?
Something psychological.
Yeah,
you try to analyse, even if you analysed it, would always come in the way.
To be honest, I'd be too proud to pray for it. Not too proud. I'd be too scared.
Well done, Maria and Norman, for your great testimonies. And now we're going to sort of lighten up things, and we're going to be looking at Christian celebrities. Here we're going from looking at John Lennon and finishing with Cliff Richard. So what an exciting time we're going to have here. Okay, off we go.
A Vatican newspaper has forgiven John Lennon for his claim 40 years ago that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus. In an article in a magazine marking the 40th anniversary of the Beatles' White Album, Lennon's remark is dismissed as a youthful joke and described as the bragging of a young English working class musician just showing off. And I was going to suggest, as you were around at the time, Howard, was he showing off, or is it true?
I think it was a very bad, naive remark at the time.
Yeah. So there was no truth in it then?
No truth in what?
That he was bigger than Jesus.
I think we can safely say that's true.
Was he talking about just being famous?
You're talking about popularity, or at the time.
Yeah, well, he was, wasn't he?
I think, I mean, Jesus' popularity is a useful yardstick. So if you can use anyone as a measuring stick, you might as well use probably the one name that is well-known more than anyone else is.
Time.
That and David Beckham, I suppose.
It was probably true in the Middle East.
Right. But in the 60s England, John Lennon was more famous than Jesus, and that was it.
I like that it took the Vatican 40 years to forgive that. It's quite a grudge for one sentence.
Yeah. It was nice of him to bring it up, but who are they to forgive him?
Well, they are God's representatives on earth.
The self-appointed representatives. Yeah.
Lennon first provoked the ire of the Vatican in 66 at the height of Beatlemania by saying he did not know which would die out first, Christianity or rock and roll. That's what John Lennon said. At the time, it was very controversial. But now you've got Christian rock and roll.
Yeah, indeed.
So it's merged together. And
it shows you how sensitivities have changed, though.
Yeah, they wouldn't worry.
If there was an outcry about that statement, think of how many statements get said now.
But these days, John Lennon figure might use Muhammad instead of Jesus. Then that would cause a few problems, wouldn't it?
They'd rather say it about Jesus.
Yeah.
No, to be controversial.
Yeah.
That's Okay, let's move on from that.
Well, that's kind of, I suppose, the Beatles were making headlines, weren't they? They were travelling around the world, and they were the first people to get behind their Iron Curtain and all that kind of thing. So, I suppose, in a way...
And of course, John Lennon wasn't exactly a friend of Christianity, was he, like, later on?
He wasn't, but supposedly, according to a chap who ran Maranatha in America, he was on his way to witness to John Lennon and had to cancel the meeting with him because he was doing something else. And in between that time was when he got shot. Mm. He actually thought that John Lennon was sort of on the verge.
Really?
He'd spoken to him.
Maybe,
he'd spoken to him. And
he was when famous personalities become Christians, the Christian establishment grabbed them, and like with Bob Dylan, that didn't go very, very well, did it, when he became a believer?
No.
And with John Lennon, the same thing may have happened. He might have been...
It's weird, it works both ways, though, because America...
Better than what happened to him, huh?
It's a brilliant selling point, It's a brilliant selling point, though. If you go to America, being a Christian, the great selling point. You've got the Jonas Brothers and all that.
Yeah.
It's a way to sell records. I love Jesus and I'm not having sex, and suddenly you're number one. It's quite... But obviously it doesn't work in England, though. You wouldn't get it in England. No. Someone that's a Christian wouldn't... I mean, if you look at Natasha Bedingfield, she went to America and got really big there and is now sort of known in England, but it's in America where Christians in the music world can really get... Whether it's they're necessarily Christians or using it as a selling point.
Massive industry.
But like the only Christian musician we have is Cliff Richard, and he's probably the most hated man in the UK in many ways. I think I know terrorists that have had less bad words spoken about than Cliff Richard.
We had a cardboard cutout of Cliff Richard in our house, didn't we?
Life size.
Life size.
Oh,
we did.
For a very good reason.
Why?
What was that?
I don't know.
Were you there when he came and sang at our old church?
Yeah, I interviewed him.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I was the opening act for him.
I was told that when Steve proposed to Monica, he was actually hiding behind that cutout.
I fell for it.
And his lips didn't move.
I couldn't do it now. Parts of my body will be sticking out around the side of it.
You're a lot slimmer.
but I did it now.
No,
where did it go?
We had a baby that hated any being left alone in the room.
What, this one here?
Yes.
Bill.
And he was sitting in his little chair.
Can we have his name, please?
And every time we'd left the room, he'd go... He'd hate to be on his own.
So
Michelle worked at HMV and they were getting rid of the...
How deeply has this gone, Phil?
What do you think about Cliff Richard these
days? So we thought we'd try and be clever. She brought home this big cardboard cutout of Cliff Richard that had been in the window at HMV. And we thought if we creep it in and put it in front of him, he might not notice that he's on his own. And he was supposed to represent a human being, but it didn't work. he did actually notice the difference between a two-dimensional and...
I don't know anything more disturbing than going to sit with a huge cardboard cutout of Cliff Richard standing above me the moment I wake up.
Did he have nightmares?
Anyway, he came through in the end, and this one, don't they, Cliff Richard? Okay.
There's one thing about Flat Eric.
You've been listening to the Saffron Planet Show with the Malts, the Worth and the Jeffrey family. Special guests Chris, Norman and Jaime. Editing by Steve Malts, mixing by Steve Jeffrey and music by Howard Worth. SaffronPlanet.net. See you next week. Saffron.